ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashram Dharma, Text Number 38. Dukho Garkeshu Kameshu Jata Nirveda Atmavan Ajigyasita Madharano Munim Gurum Upavachet Dukho Garkeshu Kameshu Jata Nirveda Atmavan Ajigyasita Madharamo Munim Gurum Upaprajet Dukkha
Unhappiness.
Udarkeshu.
In that
which brings
as its future result.
Kameshu. In sense gratification.
Jata.
Arisen.
Nirvedaha.
Detachment.
Atmavan.
Desiring spiritual perfection. In life.
Ajigyasita.
One who has not seriously considered.
Mat.
Me.
Dharma.
The process of obtaining.
Munim.
A wise person.
Gurum,
a spiritual master.
Upabrajet,
he should approach.
One
who is detached from sense gratification, knowing its result to be miserable, and who desires spiritual perfection, but who has not seriously analyzed the process for obtaining me, should approach a bona fide and learned spiritual master. Purport. In the previous verses, Lord Krishna described the duty of one who has developed perfect knowledge. Now Lord Krishna discusses the situation of one who, desiring self-realization, has become detached from material life but lacks perfect knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Such a detached person, desiring self-realization, must approach the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master in Krishna consciousness. And then he will quickly come to the standard of perfect understanding. One who is seriously inclined towards spiritual perfection should not hesitate to adopt the regular discipline necessary for achieving the highest perfection in life.
Om Agyana Dimirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gada Mahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vajjalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dina Tavinam.
Mm-hmm. So, pretty much the essence of spiritual understanding is to approach a spiritual master. When one wants to be educated in a particular science or discipline, then one has to approach the appropriate school and receive instructions from the teacher. One can receive a theoretical understanding of things by reading books, but no one would be very keen to visit a surgeon who had never ever performed an operation before and who said, yes, I've learned all of that I know from reading books. So there has to be a theoretical understanding and also a practical application. And generally we learn the theory from study and from association, but practice is learned by example, by taking the association of the guidance, the personal guidance of a person who is adept or learned in the process of, or the discipline that one is aspiring for or wants to be trained in. So one has to approach someone who knows the science of devotional service or knows the science of Krishna consciousness. And basically learn from them. We have an interesting process in pursuing the path of bhakti. The system is somewhat untraditional in the sense that one approaches a spiritual master in a Vedic tradition and is initiated first, and then after the initiation one is gradually educated in the process of the study of the Vedas. And this is a system. Upanayanam means literally bringing a person closer for training or education. And the initiation takes place before the training and education is begun. But in the process of bhakti or devotional service is not dependent upon initiation. Whilst initiation is important, and as a formality we follow the process or the system of taking initiation, the process of bhakti isn't dependent upon initiation itself. There's an interesting verse and a purport that I wanted to read, which came to mind last night when I was thinking about this verse, and it gives an example of this principle. Because many of us come to Krishna consciousness and we start chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service before we're initiated. Right? This is our system. And we learn the process of devotional service from many people. We don't just seek out a guru and then learn from that one person. In fact, very often we take diksha or initiation from a person who's very remote from us in many respects. And in fact, our actual training is from, you know, people that we associate with in the ashram or devotees that we know at the temple, or a person who may be assigned to give us guidance, specifically in our initial training and in later training. When it comes to worshipping the deity, for example, one in a temple, one is usually put under the charge of a devotee who's expert or who's trained in that particular process of worship for the deity that one is worshipping. And that will then be done under the auspices, say, of the head pujari. So in that way we actually take instructions and learn the process of devotional service from many people. Which is quite valid, because Krishnadas Kaviraj points out in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the spiritual master is variously manifest. In the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Vande Guru. He doesn't say Vande Guru, he says Vande Gurun. I offer my obeisances to my spiritual masters. Recognizing that we have, or recognizing that there is a variety, or there are different manifestations of the spiritual master. There's the Brahma Pradashika Guru, the person who guides us or introduces us to the process of bhakti. Then there's Siksha Gurus. Siksha Guru is Siksha Gurus are persons who train us and instruct us in the process of devotional life. And the Diksha Guru is the person who initiates us formally into the practice or the process of devotional service. Krishnadas Kaviraj mentions, and Prabhupada emphasizes the point, that actually each of these manifestations is equal. They're equal representatives of Krishna, but for different purposes, for different functions. And he mentions that one can only have one Diksha Guru, but one can have many Siksha Gurus. The Bhatma Pradashika Guru is, in effect, another type of Siksha Guru. So two types, basically, Siksha and Diksha. We can only have one Diksha Guru, but we can have many Siksha Gurus. And we are taught to recognise the manifestations of the spiritual master as being equal and important, in that they represent Krishna. And it's the means by which, by the association of the guru, one is trained in the process of devotional service. Now, the section that I wanted to read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes a discussion that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had with Satyaraj Khan. And this is part of three famous discussions that Lord Chaitanya had with the residents of Kulinagram. And they basically asked the same question each time they met. Satyaraj Khan said, "My dear Lord, being a householder and a materialistic man, I do not know the process of advancing in spiritual life." So this is the correct mood, mentality of a devotee in approaching the spiritual master. "I'm a fool, please instruct me." "I therefore submit myself under your lotus feet and request you to give me orders." Tadvidhi panipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Satyaraj Khan is exemplifying, and all true devotees exemplify this principle of submission, inquiry, and then the offering of service. So he's presenting himself in a submissive way. He's inquiring, "How can I advance? Please give me your orders so I can now go and fulfill them." The quality, proper qualities of a devotee, of a disciple. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "Without cessation, continue chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. Whenever possible, serve him and his devotees, the Vaishnavas. So two instructions from Lord Chaitanya. Chant Hare Krishna and serve the devotees. Very important. Upon hearing this, Satyaraj said, "How can I recognize a Vaishnava? Please let me know what a Vaishnava is. What are his common symptoms?" Someone has to be able to recognize a Vaishnava before he can serve them. Right? In other words, one should select qualified people to serve, not that one should serve rascals. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "Whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is the topmost human being." This must have been this is the first time that they asked the question. So anybody who chants Hare Krishna once is most worshipable. Of course, we know that there are some people who chant Hare Krishna once and they're not worshipable. So there has to be some discrimination in working out who is a devotee and who is not. Shall I read the purport of this one? I didn't. The purport I want to get to is a couple of purports away. Anyway, we'll see how we go. I'll read the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna once, a person becomes perfect. That may have worked for you, but it hasn't worked for me yet. Why does a person become perfect if they chant Hare Krishna even just once?
Not chanting Hare Krishna can destroy more sins in your body.
Yeah. But that doesn't stop you necessarily from going out and committing more sins. Right?
They're already on the path.
Yes. On the path of perfection. Yes. Samyaghi Vyavasito Hisaha. So he's on the path of perfection. Such a person is understood to be a Vaishnava. So whoever chants Hare Krishna is understood to be a Vaishnava. With such faith and belief, one may begin a life of Krishna consciousness. But an ordinary person cannot chant the holy name of Krishna with such faith. An ordinary person cannot chant the holy name of Lord Krishna with such faith. This is confirmed by Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita, Krishneti Yasya Giritam Manasadriyeta. One should accept the holy name of Krishna to be identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Transcendence Himself. The holy name of Krishna is also identical with Krishna and is also Chintamani. So when we chant Hare Krishna, then we're automatically associating with Krishna. The name Krishna is the personification of sound, perfectly transcendental and eternally liberated from material contamination. One should understand that the name Krishna and Krishna are identical. Having such faith, one must continue to chant the holy name. So, it's okay to chant the holy name once and become perfect, but you can't stop there. You have to keep chanting. When one is situated on the neophyte platform, one cannot understand the devotional ingredients of a pure, unalloyed devotee. However, when the novice engages in devotional service, especially in deity worship, and follows the order of a bona fide spiritual master, he becomes a pure devotee. Anyone can take advantage of hearing about Krishna consciousness from a pure devotee, and thus gradually become purified. A devotee who believes that the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord is a pure devotee, even though he may be in the neophyte stage. By his association, others may also become Vaishnavas. One is known as a materialistic devotee if he simply worships the deity of Hari with faith, but does not show proper respect to the devotees and to others. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.47. Acharyam eva haraye ya pujam sadai yehate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smritaha. Anyone who engages with faith in the worship of the deity of Hari but does not show proper respect to the devotees and to others is known as a materialistic devotee. However, by associating with a neophyte devotee who believes that the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, one can become a devotee also. When Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanatana Goswami, he said, Sradavan jana hoy bhakti adhikari uttama madhyam kanishta shraddha anusari yahar komala shraddha se kanishta jan krame krame tenho bhakta hoibe uttam Rati Prem Tarat Mye Bhakta Taratma. A person who has attained firm faith is a real candidate for advancing in Krishna consciousness. According to the faith, there are first class, second class, and neophyte devotees. One who has preliminary faith is called Kanishta, or a neophyte. The neophyte, however, can become an advanced devotee if he strictly follows the regulated principles set down by the spiritual master. The pure devotee whose faith advances becomes a Madhyam Adhikari and Uttam Adhikari. So how do we become an Uttam Adhikari? You already answered one question. Somebody else? Yeah. How? Specifically here. The neophyte, however, can become an advanced devotee if he strictly follows the regulative principles set down by who? Spiritual master. Yeah, so we have to follow the order of the spiritual master. It is thus concluded that even a neophyte devotee is superior to the karmis and jnanis because he has full faith in chanting the holy name of the Lord. I was listening to a lecture the other day. Prabhupada was pointing out the difference between a karmi and a jnani and the devotees. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam which explains that a person may follow the rules and regulations of their vana and their ashram. A person who is described as dharma nishta. In other words, a person who follows the regulated principles of their dharma very steadily. Right? Dharma nishta means one who is very righteous and religious in following their duties. But Prabhupada makes the point, he said, such a person is not as good as a devotee who follows the process of devotional service with sentimentality or with some immaturity and then falls away from the process of devotional service. The Bhagavatam makes this point that even if a neophyte devotee follows the process of devotional service but isn't consistent, isn't determined in their practice and even falls down, they're in a better position than the dharma nishta. And he makes the point that a person who's dharma nishta, they may follow the principles of the Vedic principles that are outlined in terms of their vana and their ashram, but they're not guaranteed of taking a human birth in their next lifetime. He says, for them, it's unsure where they will end up. They could end up in an animal species, or you could even go to the demigods, the higher planetary system, if they're pious. And there's always the risk that they can fall down into the lower species of life. But for a devotee, it's guaranteed that they'll take birth as a human in the next life. There's the advantage of being a devotee, and even a devotee who falls down. Because sometimes, people come to devotional service out of sentimentality. not realizing what a commitment devotional service actually is. And then they think, ooh, this is too hard. Or they may not even think like that. They may just simply be distracted by other things. But the practice of devotional service is so powerful, the chanting of Hare Krishna is so powerful, that that person, Nihavikramanasoshti Pratyovayana Vijate, was mentioned in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, even just a little advancement on the path of devotional service saves one from having to take birth again in the animal species. This is the potency of devotional service. So, anybody who has dedication to the process of devotional service and follows the instructions of the spiritual master, and keeping in mind that the spiritual master is that person who simply guides us on the path of devotional service, points us in the direction. That's Krishna personally appearing before us in the form of Devatma Pradasika Guru, or Krishna appearing in the form of those who train us and educate us in the practice of devotional service, who then lead us to the point of initiation. And then, of course, the initiating spiritual master, who may also instruct us. Each one of these personalities helps the aspiring transcendentalist make progress on the path of devotional service. So it's interesting here. Eka Krishna name kare sarva papakshay nava vida bhakti purna nama hoite hoy. Simply by chanting the holy, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Satyaraj Khan, instructing him how to make advancement. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is relieved from all the reactions of a sinful life. This is what Rasanandini quoted. One can complete the 9 processes of devotional service simply by chanting the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya makes a very interesting statement. Diksha purascharya vidhi apeksha na kare jiva spashe achandala sabare udhare. One does not have to undergo initiation or execute the activities required before initiation. One simply has to vibrate the holy name with his lips. Thus even a man in the lowest class, Chandala, can be delivered. So it's interesting. Lord Chaitanya here makes the comment that actually you don't need to take initiation if you chant Hare Krishna. You don't need to take initiation. Of course you need to chant Hare Krishna and keep chanting, because the holy name has the power in its own right to initiate the devotee. And this is explained in the purport. But what's also explained in this purport, and what's important, is Prabhupada points out why we do take initiation, which is the what is stated in this verse that we're looking at here. If one wants to make advancement in spiritual life, then one needs to take shelter of the spiritual master in his variety of manifestations. But one also has to take initiation in order to be formally accepted into the bhakti cult, if you like. Prabhupada says, Srila Jiva Goswami explains Diksha in his Bhakti Sandhava 283. Divyam Jnanam Yato Dadyat Kuryat Papasya Sankshayam Tasmat Diksheti Sa Prokta Deshikai Stattva Kovidai. Diksha is the process by which one can awaken his transcendental knowledge and vanquish all reactions caused by sinful activity. What's the first item of the 64 items of devotional service that's recommended by Rupa Goswami? Yes, take shelter of a spiritual master. Diksha is the process by which one can awaken his transcendental knowledge and vanquish all reactions caused by sinful activity. A person expert in the study of the revealed scriptures knows this process as Diksha. The regulative principles of diksha are explained in the Hari Bhakti Vilas and in Bhakti Sandarbha as stated. I won't read the Sanskrit, it's too long. Even though born in a Brahmin family, one cannot engage in Vedic rituals without being initiated and having a sacred thread. Although born in a Brahmin family, one becomes a Brahmana after initiation and a sacred thread ceremony. Unless one is situated as a Brahmana, he cannot worship the holy name properly. According to the Vaishnava regulated principles, one must be initiated as a Brahmana. The Hari Bhakti Vilas quotes the following injunction from the Vishnu Yamala. Unless one is initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, all his devotional activities are useless. No? A person who is not properly initiated can descend again into the animal species.
Whoa.
Just in case you are thinking, okay, I'm chanting Hare Krishna now and I can take it easy, then we get a verse like this, just to shake us out of our complacency. Hari Bhakti Vilas further quotes, it is the duty of every human being to surrender to a bona fide spiritual master, giving him everything, body, mind and intelligence. One must take Vaishnav initiation from him. So earlier on, Lord Chaitanya, you know, this is the purport of the verse where Lord Chaitanya says, you don't have to take initiation. All you need to do is accept the holy name. Now Prabhupada's quoting a whole list of verses here which says, no, you have to take initiation. Just in case we think we're okay by just chanting Hare Krishna. The Bhakti Sandarbha gives the following quotation from the Tattvasagara. By chemical manipulation, bell metal is turned into gold when touched by mercury. Similarly, when a person is properly initiated, he can acquire the qualities of a Brahmana. The Hari Bhakti Vilas, in discussing the Purascharya process, quotes the following verses from Agastya Samhita. In the morning, afternoon and evening, one should worship the deity, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, offer oblations, perform a fire sacrifice and feed the brahmanas. These five activities constitute Purascharya. To attain full success, when taking initiation from the spiritual master, one should first perform these Purascharya processes. Prabhupada says, the word Pura means before and Charya means activities. Due to the necessity of these activities, we do not immediately initiate disciples in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. For 6 months, a candidate for initiation must first attend aarti and classes in the shastras, practice the regulated principles and associate with other devotees. When one is actually advanced in the Purascharya Vidhi, he is recommended by the local temple president for initiation. It is not that anyone can be suddenly initiated without meeting the requirements. When one is further advanced by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra 16 rounds daily, following the regulative principles and attending classes, he receives a sacred thread, brahminical recognition, after the second 6 months. So here Prabhupada's outlining what our process is. You know, as I mentioned, the traditional Vedic system is by your birth, if you like, as a Brahmana, or born in a Brahmin family, you're automatically, by that association, qualified. And then in order to instigate or to start the process of spiritual training, the Upanayanam ceremony is performed and then the disciple is given the sacred thread, and one then follows the process of education and training in spiritual life. But here Prabhupada says in our system, in the bhakti system, if you like, one is first of all elevated, if you like, to the brahminical platform by engaging in the Purascharya process And our Purushkarya process is, as is mentioned here, what's that? What's our Purushkarya process?
Attending
RT. What else?
Classes.
Huh?
Classes.
Hearing classes. What else do we do? Chanting Hare Krishna. Good, I'm glad you mentioned that one. What else? Huh? Go to the Holy Dharma. Did Prabhupada say that? I mean, you can go to the Holy Dharma and it is beneficial. I don't think that's one of the... That's not what Prabhupada mentions, though. What else does he say? You can do that, but it's not mentioned here. Huh? Feed the brahmanas. Yes, yeah, serve the devotees. Associate with the devotees. That was my first service. Perform jagya. Yeah, that's interesting. Prabhupada, that's mentioned in the verse, but Prabhupada doesn't mention that for in the processes that we practice. And there's a reason for that. Why is it? Why don't we perform jagyas? Yes, we perform the Sankirtan jagya. Jagyai Sankirtan Praye Yujanti Hi Sumeda Saha. So our jagya is not, you know, swaha, you know, blah, 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 blah. But our jagya is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Right? We have to sit down for 2 hours every day, thereabouts, and chant Hare Krishna. Right? That's a sacrifice. A major sacrifice. So, this is our system, if you like. In order to... And there's a good reason for that. It's because traditionally in the Vedic culture, a brahmana's, a child born in a brahmana's family, is already very elevated and qualified. And so he's ready for initiation. Whereas in this day and age, in the Kali Yuga, people that come to Krishna consciousness, they come from all odd sort, you know, odds and ends. That's why Prabhupada says we don't initiate them immediately, but we prepare them. You know, it's interesting here that it says, you know, unless you've taken initiation, then, you know, you can still become an animal. Right? And so one might think, oh, does that mean that what a, you know, and what was the other, there was another quotation here. Adikshitasya vamaru kritam savam niratakam. Unless one is initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, all his devotional activities are useless. Right? So one might think, oh, I'm doing all of these devotional activities, but I haven't taken initiation, so it's all useless. But it's not. It's part of this Purushkarya process. Before initiation, one is trained, and one practices the activities of devotional service, and by that practice is elevated to the point of preparation for initiation. So it is actually very important. I'm not sure if it's in this purport. It may be a bit later on, but Prabhupada gives the example. It's a bit like, you know, if you want to sow a crop in a field, before you sow the crop, you plough the soil and you make sure that it is ready to receive the seed. So that when you plant the seed, then it'll nourish, it'll be nourished very easily and will grow very rapidly. So the Purushkarya practices in devotional service help cultivate our consciousness and our practice so that when we are initiated, then with the giving of the mantra by the spiritual master, then with the initiation process, our prior practice in devotional service is solidified when we get the initiation. Sometimes it happens, actually, you know, that devotees get initiated and then they think, what happened? Because, you know, you wake up the day after you're initiated and you feel the same as you did the day before. And you think, well, what happened? Did anything happen? Huh? I didn't know, you know, because sometimes I think I get initiated and I'm going to get some then I'm going to get some shakti, some power, you know, some power's got to come down from Vaikuntha and I'm immediately going to that doesn't happen. You sort of wake up the next day and think, oh boy, it's just as hard to get up from Mongolati as it was yesterday. So what happened? But we have to remember that initiation is just the beginning. So we've done the preparation, because we tend to think, well, I've done all this preparation, and now, you know, I'm initiated, that's it. I should be back home, back to Godhead, right away. But it takes some time, actually, to appreciate, after initiation, what has actually happened. What has actually happened. And it requires, you know, some dedication, because again, it is just initiation. It is just the beginning. It is not the. It's not that we've arrived when we've got initiation. We've got our name. We've got our beads and so forth. But one has to appreciate that that really is just the start, and one then has to follow the instructions very closely and very dedicatedly in order for one to then build steadily on that initiation, just as is mentioned here. There's that warning. A person who is not properly initiated can descend again into the animal species. Ooh. Maybe. Actually, you know, and even we know that a person who's initiated, well, certainly from the story of Judd Bharat, he was an elevated devotee, yet he also went back down into the animal species. So we can't become complacent. Anyway, without performing the Purushcharya activities, as Prabhupada speaking here, one cannot become perfect even by chanting this mantra for hundreds of years. However, one who has undergone the Purushcharya Vidhi process can attain success very easily. If one wishes to perfect his initiation, he must first undergo the Purushcharya activities. Because, and you know, this happened. Prabhupada did initiate disciples who just turned up. There was a jagya going on. Devotees said, oh, we're getting initiated today. And then somebody just happened to turn up at the temple said, oh, yeah, okay, I'm in. You're getting initiated? Oh, yeah, why not? But then the next day, gone. Huh? So this is why the Purushcharya process is important, especially for us, and why we don't generally recommend people for initiation, you know, on the first day that they come to the temple. The Purushcharya process is the life force by which one is successful in chanting the mantra. Without the life force, one cannot do anything. Similarly, without the life force of Purushcharya Vidhi, no mantra can be perfected. Of similar importance is Diksha, which is explained as follows in Bhakti Sandarbha, and there's a couple of Sanskrit verses that I won't read. In other words, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is so powerful that it does not depend on official initiation. So now it appears to be contradictory. Hang on a second. Prabhupada's just saying you have to take initiation, you've got to follow the Purushcharya process. But then he again says, as Lord Chaitanya said, however, the chanting of Hare Krishna is so potent, and if one takes it with full faith, then one doesn't have to take initiation. But if one is initiated and engages in Pancharatra Vidhi Didi worship, his Krishna consciousness will awaken very soon, and his identification with the material world will be vanquished. It's interesting how, you know, when Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON, he established temples, and in those temples he installed deities. Now you would think, why would Prabhupada do that? If chanting Hare Krishna is the Yuga Dharma, why do we have to worship the deity? And one of the reasons is because by worshipping the deity, especially according to the Pancharatriki Vidhi, we follow follows two tracks, much like a train runs on two tracks. We have the Bhagavat Vidhi, which is the hearing and chanting, study of the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, chanting Hare Krishna. That's the Bhagavad Vidhi, basically focused on hearing and chanting. But we also have the Pancharatrika Vidhi. That's the other line. And that's the worship of the deity. And when we combine a Bhagavat Vidhi with the rules and regulations of the Pancharatrika Vidhi, which means rising early, taking bath, going to aarti, worshipping the deity, doing... And you see in our temple activities, everything revolves around the deity. And when you combine those two activities together, then it's like supercharging the chanting of Hare Krishna. Right? So with the deity worship, that supercharges the chanting of Hare Krishna, so it becomes very, very potent, and one makes rapid advancement. The more one is freed from material identification, the more one can realize that the spirit soul is qualitatively as good as the supreme soul. You know, when you're running around getting the flowers together for the deity, when you're in the paraphernalia room washing the paraphernalia, then what are you thinking? You know, what am I doing this for? Well, it's probably I've made life so hard. I said, Prabhupada warns against this kind of mentality. He says it's very dangerous for us to have this mentality. We think,
oh no,
I've got to sweep the courtyard, or I've got to put out the rubbish, or I have to clean the deity's paraphernalia. When we start to see the deity as just a lump of stone and not realize that actually he's Krishna, because here's the thing, when we engage in these activities, we're forced to think, I'm doing this for Krishna. And so that automatically puts us on a transcendental platform. Just by dint of doing that service, we're elevated to a very, very high platform of self-realization. And, you know, we're not that qualified. But simply by doing those activities, we're immediately elevated to the transcendental platform. Even if the mind's saying, you know, why have I got to get up so early in the morning just to worship the deities? But it's very powerful. So that's why they're combined together. At such a time when one is situated on the absolute platform, he can understand that the holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself are identical. At that stage of realization, the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna mantra, cannot be identified with any material sound. If one accepts the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as a material vibration, he falls down. Just as if we accept the deity as some piece of stone or a piece of wood or a piece of metal, where our consciousness brings us back down into the material realm. So if we accept the Maha Mantra as just something material, that also brings us down to the material platform. But if we accept these things as they are, which is Krishna's presence before us, then we'll be also elevated to the transcendental platform. One should worship and chant the holy name of the Lord by accepting it as the Lord himself. One should therefore be initiated properly according to revealed scriptures under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. Although chanting the holy name is good for both the conditioned and liberated soul, it is especially beneficial to the conditioned soul, because by chanting it one is liberated. When a person who chants the holy name is liberated, he attains the ultimate perfection by returning home back to Godhead. In the words of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna mantra hoite habe samsara mochan, Krishna nam hoite pabe Krishna racharan. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one can obtain freedom from material existence. Indeed, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one will be able to see the lotus feet of the Lord. The offenseless chanting of the holy name does not depend on the initiation process. Although initiation may depend on Purushcharya or Purushcharana, the actual chanting of the holy name does not depend on Purushcharya, Vidhi, or the regulated principles. If one chants the holy name without committing an offence, he attains all success. Just that when we come to Krishna consciousness, when we first receive the Maha Mantra, it's a rare soul who chants Hare Krishna offencelessly. Huh? you know, just your chanting is pure right from the word go. During the chanting of the holy name, the tongue must work. Simply by chanting the holy name, one is immediately delivered. The tongue is sevan mukhe jiva. It is controlled by service. One whose tongue is engaged in tasting material things and also talking about them cannot use the tongue for absolute realization. With these material senses, one cannot understand the transcendental holy name of the Lord or his form, activities and pastimes. However, when one actually engages in devotional service utilizing the tongue, the Lord is revealed. Then there's a couple of translations I'll read here and then we'll finish. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one dissolves his entanglement in material activities. After this, one becomes very attracted to Krishna, and thus dormant love for Krishna is awakened. Therefore, as part of the Purushacharya process, we chant Hare Krishna. And practice, we're practicing. The holy name of the Lord Krishna is an attractive feature for many saintly liberal people. It is the annihilator of all sinful reactions and is so powerful that save for the dumb who cannot chant it, it is readily available to everyone, including the lowest type of man, the Chandala. The holy name of Krishna is the controller of the opulence of liberation, and it is identical with Krishna. Simply by touching the holy name with one's tongue, immediate effects are produced. Chanting the holy name does not depend on initiation, pious activities, or the Purushacharya regulated principles generally observed before initiation. The holy name does not wait for all these activities. It is self-sufficient. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then finally advised, one who is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is understood to be a Vaishnava. Therefore, you should offer all respects to him. So, the chanting of Hare Krishna is so transcendental and so potent that it doesn't wait for any Brahmacharya process. However, because we don't chant the holy name in the proper state of mind, in the proper consciousness, initially, then we require the Purushacharya process, and Prabhupada gives it for us for 6 months. We chant Hare Krishna, we follow the regulated principles, we associate with the devotees, we worship the deity, and you know, we practice devotional service. Then when it's seen that a person has the ability to stick to the process, then we allow them to take shelter of an initiating guru. That doesn't mean then that when we take shelter of our initiating guru that we neglect all of the other people who have trained us in Krishna consciousness. It sometimes happens, you know, people think, oh, now my guru is the, you know, they're the only person in my life and I don't have to listen to anybody else. That's a Kanishtha, actually. That's a Kanishtha Adhikari. But then we're then tested again for another 6 months. Actually, in ISKCON, we test, Prabhupada says here 6 months, but we test people for 12 months, which is not bad. Then we take initiation. Hopefully by that point in time, we have learned the practice of devotional service. We know how to follow the regulated principles. We know how to worship the deity. We know how to associate with devotees. We know how to render devotional service. And so that when we take initiation, then our formal commitment makes us, what's the word, committed, focused, steady in the practice of bhakti, if you like. The process of chanting Hare Krishna is such that it transcends all the rules and regulations. But only for those who have come to that offenseless stage of chanting. If you've come to the offenseless stage of chanting Hare Krishna, then there's no need for the initiation, because that's the purpose of initiation, is to bring us to that point. But even if we have come to that point, as Prabhupada points out in other places, we still follow the process, the standard process of initiation. We still follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. Even an Uttama Adhikari, who is on a very elevated platform of devotional service, still sets an example. So this principle, if one wants to learn how to practice devotional service, one has to approach a spiritual master. The spiritual master manifests in the Vatma Pradasika Guru, in the Siksha Guru, and also in the form of the initiating spiritual master. And in that way, Krishna manifests himself in the form of the spiritual masters to guide, take us back home, back to Godhead, by following their instructions, by following their guidance, by following their example. Okay, we'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? They're generally the best type.
As someone who is engaged in so many devotees in videos, helping to sit their exams, how important is it for devotees to try to follow the guidelines that the GDC has set up in the approach to initiation?
How important is it? Well, if you want to get recommended by me, you better follow the rules. As you know. Is that practical?
Yeah.
How practical? Should we follow the recommendations that are given by the GBC? What you reckon? What answer do you think I might give? Yes. Yeah. You know what I'm thinking? Here's what I'm thinking at the moment. I'm thinking of making some changes to the rules of initiation in our society. To be quite honest with you, to improve the practicality of our current regulations, because some of them are a bit odd. They're not straightforward and they're a bit wonky. What was wonky? But yes, you know, we have a 13 question test that one is supposed to take before one chooses one spiritual master. What usually happens is people, you know, they go to classes and stuff for sannyasis, karma, or some, the spiritual master comes in, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, I want to take shelter of this person. You know, they don't sort of know why or whatever. It's something that just happens spontaneously. Usually because other people are saying to them, who's your guru? Who are you going to take initiation from? Is what happens. It's basically peer pressure is what happens. Right? And so the person feels, I've got to have a guru. Which is okay, because that's our process. So usually their reasons for taking shelter of somebody is just because, you know, somebody happened to ask them that morning, who's your guru? And they get inspired by somebody. And because some devotees are much more serious than that. I exaggerate a little bit. But it does happen. It does happen. Or, you know, when I joined a temple, I was just told, here's your guru. Okay, right, very well. Here's my guru. Which is interesting because, you know, whether you choose or whether you're told that who your guru is going to be, actually, in one sense, it doesn't matter so much with your initiation. Really what matters is who instructs you. That's the most important thing. really, when it all boils down to it, who guides us in our devotional service is the most important thing. Because, you know, I got initiated, I mentioned this before, I got initiated, I'd only spoken to my initiating guru at that point in time once, and that's when I gave him my beads. And that was it, you know, and there was no other exchange. And I realized later on, I was initiated by this person, but actually the people who make a difference in my spiritual life are these other people, because they're the ones who train me. And they're the ones who tell me, "You idiot, stop doing that." What are you doing? In other words, you know, practical day-to-day instruction and advice and training came from other people. So, you know, we have this test, 13 question test. Now, some places in the world, that's it. You know, all people have to do is pass that test and then they can get initiated. Here it's a little bit different because, and in Australia it is different because our national council, actually it was the Australian and New Zealand leaders at a point in the 80s decided, you know, we need to have a better standard of training for our devotees. And so there was a test was made for first initiation and a test was made for second initiation. And so in Australia and New Zealand, you have to have passed those tests before you can be recommended for initiation. The only problem with that now is that, you know, it's not very difficult to go and find the answers to these questions somewhere. Right? Or have a chat with your friend and say, "Hey, you know, where's your test? Can I get the copy?" And that defeats the whole purpose of, you know, having a test, because people just, you know, they just copy somebody else's work and then may not understand the answer to the question. Right? That's not really a test of what you know, it's just a test of the fact that you can copy something from somebody else. So in one sense we need to have a little more flexible system so that we can actually test whether people know the essence of what's being examined rather than know whether they can copy from somebody else. It's called plagiarism or just cheating. When I was a kid it was called cheating. When you just copied somebody else's work. I mean, there must be some benefit, because, you know, what we're copying is Krishna conscious. Yes, oral testing. I'm sure a lot of our candidates would love that, because it means they don't have to write anything. Both. Okay, good. I like that idea. Yeah. Yeah. But I guess the idea is that, you know, we really want to see a solid understanding of Krishna consciousness, the application of Krishna consciousness, why we're devotees, why we're choosing a spiritual master. You know, I've had a situation where somebody's come to me one week and they said, "Look, I want to take shelter of so-and-so Maharaj." So, okay, fine. Then 3 weeks later, another spiritual master happens to come and they say, no, I've changed my mind now. He's my eternal guru. Okay, hang on a second. Last week, he was your eternal guru. This week, now this one is. Now, who is it? Of course, you know, in one sense we can have more than one eternal guru. We can. If we understand this principle of siksha properly, we can. Another reason why we should be respectful to each other, because we can always learn something from each other. So in that sense, then we become each other's gurus. Huh? This is the beauty of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Is that each, and Prabhupada's told everybody, you know, "I want you to become a guru." Huh? Not necessarily, you know, somebody who sits on a seat and hands out beads, but somebody who gives knowledge of Krishna. That's what a guru actually does. Kiba nyasi, kiba vipra, Sudya kene noi ye Krishna tapa vita se guru hoy. Krishna does, Kaviraj says, that actually quoting Lord Chaitanya, speaking to Ramananda Roy. Kiba, what is it? Kiba Vipra? Whether you are a learned Brahmana or a Kiba Nyasi, means a sannyasi, or Sudra Kerenoi, or whether you're a Sudra. If you know the science of Krishna, Krishna Tattva, if you know Krishna and the science of Krishna consciousness, whether you're a sannyasi, a Brahmana, or a Sudra, if you know the science of Krishna, then you're a guru. You're qualified to be a guru. Huh? And that means giving Krishna consciousness to others. And we should be, ideally, exchanging Krishna consciousness with each other, and in that way, becoming a guru for each other. That's why we have to be very respectful to the Vaishnavas and serve the devotees. Huh? Service manifests in many ways. Huh? Can be offering prasadam, giving assistance, and it can also be I Prabhu, you're in Maya. Jeev Jaga, wake up. In a form of instruction as well. But yeah. We could improve our systems, but at the moment we have a system. Basically, before we take shelter, we have to have been chanting 16 rounds and following the principles. Once we've taken a shelter test, then we can choose who we want to take initiation from. Then after we've been officially accepted by our spiritual master, then we can take initiation after 6 months. This is the Purushcharya process that Prabhupada wanted. Knowing that when we've tested people for that 6 months and they've shown steadiness, then we've got a good chance of them continuing on. Right? That's what we want. We want, you know, we're in it for life. No? There's a certain point where you wake up in the morning, you know, and it's, I remember when I was a young devotee, sometimes I'd fall asleep paying my obeisances at the beginning of the Tulsi prayers. And then everybody'd be standing up, and I'd have to stand up. And I think, God, I've got to do this for the rest of my life. So, yes, we do. We have to be prepared to do it for the rest of our lives. And that's why the Purushcharya system is there. The chanting of Hare Krishna is transcendental, no doubt. But in order to assist us to that point of offenseless chanting, we require so many supporting practices, you know, the worship of the deities, rising from Mangalati, worship Tulsi, you know, all of these things, all meant to bring us to the point of perfecting our chanting. Any other comments or questions? Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya.